Got time for a quick story. Imagine having stories of seeing all sorts of artists come through Eau Claire. Eau Claire is the place where we do this podcast. It's my hometown, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And Eau Claire has a big country music festival you may have heard of. It's called Country Jam. Country Jam has other locations, or has had other locations around the country, but one of its main locations is in Eau Claire. It's been going since the beginning of the 1990s. Well, also in Eau Claire is a pretty big radio station, WAXX, Wax, as it's called. Yes, it's got its name from stacks of wax vinyl records back in the 60s. Wax 104.5 Radio is the big country radio station in Eau Claire. It's usually right at the top of the ratings. Well, it doesn't hurt that it's at the top of a 2,000-foot TV tower nearby. So Wax is usually involved with Country Jam. They're not one of the same, but they're usually involved with each other, which means if you work for Wax, there's a pretty good chance you're going to get a lot of stories because you're going to see a lot of the artists coming through Country Jam because that's coming through town. Terry West got to do a lot of that in her years working in radio. She's been a radio icon in Eau Claire, and that's why we're talking to her today in this episode. She just retired after years of being in local radio on some stations around here and mainly on Wax, and talking to a whole lot of country artists. And we're going to talk about that career of being in radio over the years and seeing, getting a taste of the national music industry coming to our neck of the woods, which isn't, it's not like Eau Claire is podunk nowhere. I mean, this is a pretty big city and pretty big metropolitan area, but I think there's still this thought of, wow, Kenny Chesney's coming to Eau Claire. Carrie Underwood's coming to Eau Claire. I think it's like, okay, whatever. That it happens. But yeah, for a while, that was like a thing. Garth Brooks is coming to Eau Claire.
We have to do that yet.
Still working on that. But like, those are the sorts of acts. What, in the years that you worked on Wax and would do the interviews with Country Jam, and for those that don't know, well, okay, I'll let you describe it. How would you end up doing a lot of these interviews with the acts at Country Jam? Because this isn't like in the studio here at the radio station. This is for everyone, 20, 30,000 in some cases, to watch your interview with an artist. How does that all happen? And how did you get to interact with so many people? And we're just talking about this beyond other instances in your career.
How did it work? You mean?
Yeah, doing like the interviews with at Jam.
Right. Well, it was different years. Initially, we would do it with a tape recorder, actually, and go backstage and stand with the artist and just talk with them, holding one microphone back and forth. And I actually kind of liked that. It was a little more intimate as later on, the festivals got bigger and we added more to the festivals, like a seating area with couches. And then the logistics became a little more difficult because often you were interviewing with a second person or they had a whole group there with them and you had to have every question in mind, yet no question in mind. I always have the theory, and I think people that are good interviewers want to make it sound like you're just chatting and you're just eavesdropping, mm-hmm. you know, but that's a hard thing to do when you have people also that are watching you on a big screen and listening to you on the radio. Often, as we got into later, some of the later country jams and more recently, you need to think about what your listeners will be listening to and engaging with the audience and saying, hey, country jammers, where are you at? You know, and you can't avoid that. There's just a lot to think about. There really is. It seems like it flows sometimes. Mm-hmm. And but if you have a lot of questions in mind and aren't stuck in a specific order, you really need to listen to what your artist is saying, you know, and pull up something that you remember from way back when, not to just have your questions in a certain order, because it won't sound as natural. It should sound like you're eavesdropping. Like, I hope it sounds like people are eavesdropping on us now.
Right, exactly. Literally just chatting. That's what it
are.
Is. There happen
we
to be
are.
Microphones and there's something recording this.
Yeah.
So, that first question.
I don't even know if I answered it, but I was babbling.
Because that's the essence of what you do. backstage, and we'll get more into the specific logistics and how we interacted with everyone over the years. But to the point of where we're at, which act was the most like, wow, they're coming here? We're going to get to interact with them. They're putting on a show around here. Which was maybe the most, oh my gosh, this person's coming to Country Jam to perform, and maybe to the point that you got to score the interview, because again, there's like a, and we'll get to this later on the kind of the round robin of who all gets the opportunity to do it, because a whole lot of people do. But which one was the one where you went, wow, they're coming here?
Dolly Parton. And I didn't get to interview her. Nobody got to talk to her. And the backstage was totally locked down. We couldn't even get back there. So, you know, normally you can walk backstage. It's not a problem if you're getting from point A to point B, you know, and see all the things going on with the buses and stuff. But you got to be cool and keep your eyes straight ahead, you know, and just act like you belong there too, like one of the bands. But Dolly Parton was the one. Where it was, wow, you know, and we were even wanting to catch a view of her, you know, because we can be kind of by the gate area, feeling like groupies ourselves, because it would have been wonderful just to catch a glimpse of her or say, hey, Dolly, and do a high five or, you know, but I really thought that one was solid gold. That was really cool.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and she put on quite a show.
Let's rewind back to start with the beginning of your career and kind of lead up to this. What made you want to do radio?
My uncle. He passed away a couple years ago, but I was very close to him, and I grew up around radio. He was a DJ in Lincoln, Nebraska for years, and passed away 3 years ago and was still DJing up to that time. Keith Allen was his name in Lincoln, Nebraska, and he worked in the country format primarily. And when I was very young, I was 9, I got backstage at one of his concerts he was emceeing with Ferlin Husky, Susan Ray, and Tanya Tucker, and Billy Crash Craddock.
Wow.
Rub it in, rub it in. Uh-huh. And I got to meet Billy Crash Craddock, and it was on St. Patrick's Day. I was 9 years old. He had on a light green polyester leisure suit, and I thought he was the most gorgeous thing I'd ever seen, and I had the worst crush on him. And he smelled so good, and I got a picture taken with Billy Crash Craddock when I was 9, and I got the bug. Man, did I get the bug. I'm like, I want to meet these people. I want to do this. And just going through the motions with my uncle and seeing what he did and seeing him host a race car race and just different things made me say, wow. You know, and he said, honey, there's no money in it. And I said, that's okay. Maybe I'll find a husband with some money. But I just knew that it was what I wanted to do right at that moment when I was 9. So kind of started from there. And he would always have good tales to tell, or sometimes not. Sometimes when he'd come home for Thanksgiving or whatever, he'd say, I don't want to talk about it, darling. Let's do family time, you know, because he was so totally engrossed in all of it, you know, and dealing with it in his morning show and stuff. Yeah. But always a fun person. So, yeah.
What was your first radio, like, how did you get your first radio gig?
I guess I could back up and say how, with my schooling, it was Brown Institute in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And my senior year in high school, my guidance counselor knew that my family came from no money. He was very polite, and he said, do you want to apply for this scholarship? And I said, sure. And it was just a matter back then, which I really like, of not seeing your face or anything. It's just your voice that they're hearing. And I locked myself in my bedroom with a cassette tape, and there was a script. And the script was basically reading a news story, a series of news stories, pronouncing many words that were difficult words, and saying why you wanted to be in radio. And they had over 3,000 applicants, and 2 people won, and I was one of the 2.
Wow.
And that was for a tuition-free scholarship to TV and radio in Minneapolis. At Brown Institute. TV I didn't do so well in, but I thought I wanted to do TV, but I moved my head too much.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean? I'm so conscious of how TV people have to stay still, and I was just batting my eyes and flinging my hands, and they're like, honey, you're going to really have to tie down your hands. And I thought, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want someone to tell me what color my hair has to be or what I have to wear, and I'm kind of an independent spirit, and I mm-hmm. just thought that wasn't for me. And right. you have a TV background through your father and everything else, and you kind of mm-hmm. know that they'll say, you know, you got a zit on the end of your nose today. What can we do about that? You know, and
it's very particular. Yes.
Yeah, and I thought, no. Right. We'll do radio.
It's okay, because that's another viable medium, so it definitely works.
It absolutely is, yeah.
So first professional job.
I remember we had an event in Grand Forks, North Dakota. That's where I first worked, and there was a hot air balloon there. And I didn't get in the hot air balloon, but I talked on the microphone. And it was really like, wow, you know, it was cool. It mm-hmm. was really neat. And to hear your voice boom is really kind of scary in a way. But it was fun, and I enjoyed it. And I remember the T-shirt I had on, the station T-shirt. It was Y95 was the station at the time. It was a top 40. And I worked there the 7 to midnight shift. And then I was let go, unfortunately. And every radio person, I think, is let go. Probably not you, but if you...
So far.
Yeah, so far.
You never know.
Knock on wood.
Right.
But what happened was they were... everybody had a 4 to 5 hour air shift, mm-hmm. and they just couldn't budget-wise make it. So they had to eliminate one person. I was the newest person, and then they made the air shifts longer.
Got
you
it.
Know, but I had only been there probably a year and a half, so that was a really hard pill to swallow.
Is this in like the early 1980s,
yes,
around that time?
Yes.
Was mm-hmm. how long until, like, were there any radio gigs between then and when you ended up at I-94 in Eau Claire? Or was that next?
No, then I ended up going across town, KKXL AM, which was a real kind of hot station mm-hmm. back in the day, and it still was. I remember they still had a teletype machine in the back, and they said, well, we'll give it a try. They said, you'd be the first girl ever on the airwaves, though.
Wow.
And I was, and it went fine. But I, you know, it's like, really, dude? But I'm glad they put me on the air, and I was the first since they'd been on. Oh, it was in the late 60s.
Wow.
And I was the first female announcer ever.
Interesting.
KKXL AM.
Okay.
Yeah. And then from there, I came to Eau Claire.
So how did you get the I-94 job? And by this time, I think I-94 was, because they came on in 82.
Yeah.
Was I-94 on at that point that they made the switch to a pop format?
Because yes.
For those listening that don't know, in Eau Claire... one of the pop stations of the time was WEAQ. At that time, it was 790. It was AM radio. And then 94.1 radio was WIAL, the Wonderful Wild. It was easy listening radio. And then in 1982, mm-hmm. when a lot of stations were switching their, were going from AM to FM in terms of like top 40 radio, they did the change as well. November 82, they flipped the easy listening station to I-94 because Interstate 94, I-94 runs right by Eau Claire, so they call it I-94 since 94.1 on the dial, and established it as a pop station. Eventually WEAQ went through other formats. So by that point, when you applied, it was already I-94.
Yes, it was.
The pop station. Okay, so how did you learn that there was an opening in Eau Claire? So I'm guessing this is around 83, 84, around that time?
I came to town in 81, and I applied right away. And I'm thinking, you know, as you get older, you kind of forget the details. But I met Rick Roberts. How long had Rick been there?
And for a few, probably five-ish years. Rick Roberts was a long-time programmer for I-94 for decades and decades.
Sure. But I went there, and I landed part-time because mm-hmm. he had Pat Lang on middays, mm-hmm. and she was a really solid, great announcer and a great gal. And so I had to wait around until she decided to quit. So that didn't occur until 84. Yeah. And so I did part-time until then, and then I got the full-time middays Woohoo!
So this time you're on.
Yeah.
This is where I first heard you growing up, because I moved. My family moved with had been in Eau Claire before, like in the early '80s. I was really young at that point. We moved back in '86, and I remember as third, fourth, fifth grader, hearing you on the radio. I mean, that was one of the DJs from that era, late '80s, early '90s,
yeah.
And Terry West was one of them. So that's where I first heard you.
Well, that's flattering, although it makes me feel old, but that's okay. I've earned my retirement.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, you were one of the voices of Eau Claire Radio at that time.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So you spent, about 8-ish years from the point you became full-time, and
Yep, it was.
What stood out from your time with I-94, which at the time was not in the same building as eventually I-94 and WAX would become sister stations. They weren't at that time. They weren't rivals. They just were different.
Yeah.
Different
mm-hmm.
stations, different
sure.
different buildings. What stood out to you from your tenure at I-94?
More as I look back, at the time it didn't seem like a big deal to me, but my son was in kindergarten and my babysitter, Ginny, had an autograph book that had Hank Sr. in it. You know, it was one of those leather-bound old ones, and she had Patsy Cline, and she said, "Honey, Johnny Cash is coming to town. Can you please get his autograph?" And I said, "I'll see what I can do," because I was going to the fair, mm-hmm. you know, and I was representing the station on stage. And anyway, so when I was at the fair, I went backstage, and I asked Johnny Cash for his autograph, and he happened to be busy at the moment. But I did get that, and then it was just amazing because all the sisters were backstage with him, and we started talking, and you know, they said, "Hey, darling, why don't you stay backstage with us and just hang out, because we're just having a good old time." And I remember the Ferris wheels lit up the sky. It's so beautiful there at night.
Mm-hmm.
And John Jr. was just starting to play with him, and he was 14 at the time, I think. But my favorite memory is him. It was back when we had the old cameras, and I thought, you know, I should get a picture with him. And I asked for a picture, and he said, "Okay." And just at that moment, you could hear Johnny Cash. They were introducing him on the stage, and now Johnny Cash. And he said, "Well, hurry up." And my person, their flash wouldn't go off.
Oh boy!
And he kept saying, "Hurry up, hurry up." Out mm-hmm. of the corner of his mouth, and you can see in the picture that he's actually talking, but that gentleman waited until the flash went off, and then I've never seen a man run so fast. Boom! To the stage, you know? Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Oh boy.
So, and speaking, okay, I'm getting off topic, but another time at the fair with the Little River Band, okay, mm-hmm. let me ask you a question.
Okay.
If you were going to go on stage and your fly was unzipped, would you want someone to tell you? A girl? Because I was bringing them on stage, and now you get the rest of the story. The lead singer of the Little River Band, his fly was all the way down.
Oh, boy.
And
I don't think I'd want to be told that, because just in case, you don't know who's not going to notice it. Because as soon as someone tells you, especially if it's on a microphone, was this backstage?
This was right before they're going
on.
Okay,
there I would, because...
And I should have. I should have, but I said, I don't want him to know I'm looking down there. You know, I don't know. It's not real appropriate.
Yeah, I know. There's a dynamic.
I get it. And it was fast. It was quick. And I didn't tell him. And he went on stage and everybody laughed at him.
Oh.
I felt so bad. I'm like, oh my gosh, I could have prevented that. But you know what? His bandmates could have too. There were other people that were around.
Yeah.
But I still kind of hold a little bit of guilt about that.
Well,
so I'm really sorry.
You wouldn't have been looking, ostensibly.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. So.
You can't help but notice.
Right.
So anyway, if I could do something different, I would have told him to zip up his zipper. That's the end of my career.
Well, okay. At least you survived that one. That's good to know.
Yes.
What led you to get to WAX? What made you go at that time across town and come into this building where we're at right now and join WAX Radio?
Well, I was looking at moving up in my career, and I really liked middays, but the discussion and subject came up of doing mornings on I-94, and I'm not really a morning person, and there was a person that was selected to maybe be my partner, and I didn't feel there was chemistry there, and I just thought, I'm going to see what my options are, you know? And it was not because I wasn't happy where I was at. I just thought Wax was a big dog in town. I thought I'm ready to give it a try, or at least throw my hat in the ring, know. So I did, and it was pretty extensive interviewing. I felt like I was being interviewed to be a part of a big family, which I was, because it was a whole day of interviews and just really intense questions, and really them wanting to get to know me very much before they were going to make the jump and put me on middays. But I felt very honored and very excited when that happened. And I-94 was very good to me, but I just needed to move on with my career, and it was exciting.
So you coded over to Wax, was it around 92 or so?
92, okay. October of 92.
All right, so you're at Wax.
29 years.
That's a lot of time to talk to artists. I know, because I'd obviously being in this building, and by this point, when I came into this building was in 2001, and consolidation had happened. I-94 had already come over here. WEAQ had already come over here. So that we were all together. When I worked on Wax, when I started off as a DJ on Wax, and then when it would help in future years when I wasn't a DJ anymore, but I'd help behind the scenes, you had extensive prep for interviews. When did you start doing artist interviews, and what led you to that level of artist research and preparation?
I guess the artist research and prep, I wanted to try to ask them a question they'd never heard, or to make an interview to them that they would remember it was Wax and it was me. So I just put... And I didn't want to be caught unguarded. I'm like that in life. Let me know every facet of this. And, I maybe am too much of an extreme, but I like to prep for other members of the staff, too. Mm-hmm. I'd have envelopes on every artist with info, and if they were interviewing here, just to share that information, too, because not everybody had time to do that. What was the other part of the question? My mind is going in so many different directions. The first part, how did I start?
Get into doing the interviews.
Just being part of the staff, and the first country fest that I went to, because there was first year we did both fest and jam.
For those that don't know, Country Fest, the other big country music festival around here, which is up in the Cadott area right nearby.
So I was asked to interview Lionel Cartwright, was my very first interview. And that went fine. So then I got to talk to Marty Stewart the next day. And I thought, cool. And he smelled really good and had really cool hair. And he was so good to his fans. He had his meet and greet line was, I swear, at least 100 people. It's like, if you're in his fan club, you get to meet Marty Stewart, gosh darn.
Wow.
And you probably get to talk to him and get an autograph. He just really loved to spend time with his fans, and I'm sure he probably still does. I don't mean to talk about him in the past tense, because he's still real busy touring and stuff, if he is indeed touring now with COVID and everything. But and I got the bug. I really liked it. It scared me to death, but I liked it. Some things in life are like that. They challenge you, and you look forward to them, but when the moment comes, you got the butterflies, and but I think those are the feelings and the times that make you feel alive, and I guess I felt alive quite a bit.
Yeah. There were a whole lot of opportunities you mentioned between Jam, Northern Wisconsin State Fair, again in Chippewa Falls, right next to Eau Claire. So those are the big ones, and I mean, there'd be other opportunities to come along. So the meat of this, the interactions. Best interview you ever had?
Shania Twain. But that one was on the telephone. And we just got started talking, and this was when her first, when everything came out, and I had the fax that came in. I still have it. It came in on the fax machine. Are you surprised? I still have it.
I have a lot of
memorabilia from my notes from certain artists, but it said, Every Man of Mine, Shania Twain, and when I talked to her, it was just like, wow. Because she said, at that time, Mutt Lang, the guy that, really, he's not a very good guy, but she loved him at the time, and she said she called him Love, and I said, I call my husband Love, and it was it was very girlish, but it was very fun. And talking about horses, both of us are really passionate about horses. And just after that, I felt like, man, I want to meet her. And when we hung up, she said, gosh, I just really feel a bond with you. It was just really cool, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, that was neat, but it wasn't in person.
Interesting. Second best interview you've ever had?
I'll think of one in person. It's so hard because there have been a lot of them. Gretchen Wilson was really a good one also, because Gretchen, that was another one that felt very conversational, and I felt like I could go to her ranch, I could go there tomorrow, and we'd sit around and drink some beers and ride horses, and she was just really very cool also. Very, very cool and a neat person. I've never really met that many people I don't like.
Right. With most surprising interview, and that I can leave that wide open, whatever your definition is, but one where maybe you had one set of expectations going in, coming out, you're like, well, okay. It could be good, bad, something else, whatever you just... where you're... came out surprising.
Well, you have good questions. You're tasking me. Well, I can think of one that was, and I'm drawing a blank for his name, so that's a good thing. And you'll probably want to edit here because I can't remember what his
name
was.
That's okay. That's totally
can't remember what his name was, but he took his microphone and he put it.
Oh, in a certain spot on his body that is probably inappropriate.
That's good. I remember forgot his name.
Yeah.
But
was this like a A-lister?
No.
Okay.
No. No, and I've got a picture of him, yeah.
Like a 1:30 act at Country Jam on a Thursday?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much. I will think of the name, but okay. So many names come to mind.
Okay.
Okay, so the question was
most surprising interview.
I would say Joe Diffie. And Joe Diffie, unfortunately, we lost him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so cool. Such a neat guy. And he had the bluest stinking eyes. Oh, my gosh. And I know it wasn't colored contacts. And it was equivalent, his blue eyes were equivalent to Martina McBride's for a female, because hers are just
right. A
beam right through you. Same with Joe Diffie. He had the most gorgeous eyes and a gorgeous heart to go with it. He was sweet. I interviewed him 3 different times. But one time when I was interviewing him, I don't know how it got brought up, but some weird questions will come up. I say, when you were a kid, what was in your bedroom? And he said, well, I had spaceship curtains, and I just thought that was so cool that his mom had made drapes in his room and spaceship. He had the spaceship theme. Just how honest and forthright he was, and just really a neat guy. And all of his friends, he'd invite local friends to be backstage at Country Jam too, which was really cool for them. So, yeah. And his dad was actually a bus driver for Montgomery Gentry for a while.
Mm, wow.
So, yeah. So,
what would have been worst interview you've ever had?
Brooks and Dunn.
Mm.
Like them.
tell the story of what happened with Brooks and Dunn.
They were top of the crop at the time, and it was a day that was like 95 degrees, and it was hot. And they always give you an interview start time, and generally, 95% of the time, the artists are going to be, boom, right there at that time because they're running a tight ship. Well, I don't know what happened, but it was more than an hour and a half I had to wait in the heat. I believe they decided to wait until after their show. I can't remember the exact reason why I was just sitting there waiting so long, sweating, and I was thinking of different questions to ask them, as I always do, and it's really hard when you have two strong personalities, like both of them are. So I wrote down a couple questions for each of them in marker on my hand while I was waiting, because if I can look at a keyword, if I can glance down in the heat of the moment and just a keyword like books or whatever, I'll know where I'm going to go, because it's really easy when you're looking at two people that are famous and you've seen on billboards and everything else to not get a little bit lost in your thoughts. You really have to stay focused, not think about the audience out there that you can possibly see. It just depends. So I had a few words down just to keep myself on focus. And it's no worse than holding a notepad, but I didn't like to hold a notepad. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I asked a question of Ronnie Dunn. And he's the taller one.
Mm-hmm.
The one I really don't like.
The one who doesn't wear the hat.
Yeah.
Kix Brooks is the guy with the hat.
Yeah. And Ronnie does more of the lead vocals.
Right.
And I asked him a question, and it was a good question, but I don't remember what it was. And he said, "What's on your hand?" And I said, "Huh?" And I tried to ask my question. He said, "No, what's on your hand?" And I put my hand up, and I have this picture in my office of my hand. I'm fake smiling with Brooks and Dunn going, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was really rude, you know? And I said, I wrote down just some keywords for questions because you kept me waiting for quite a while. And they weren't very kind. At least Ronnie wasn't. Kix just kind of blended in. But I thought it was kind of not professional, you know. And I'm sorry, but given the choice through the rest of my career, given a choice between playing a Brooks and Dunn song or another song, I always scratched out Brooks and Dunn.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
I did. But it was only if it was a choice, you know, if I came to the end of the hour.
And usually the playlists are preset from a music director, but you also did a request show.
That's why don't bite the hand that feeds you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Not that I'm King Tut or anything, but I do make choices, and it comes down to the DJ on the air, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just, they didn't treat me very nicely, so.
Now, I think I heard you say that you ran into them.
I did.
A few years after that.
I did run into them a few years after that, and I was invited on their bus with my husband, and I said, "Do you remember me?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, we remember you. You were the one that wrote on your hand." They remembered. You know?
Oh, wow.
No doubt. I thought.
That's
they see so many people.
They do, which that's the thing. Anytime like I do an interview, and if there's anything that maybe comes across as a little awkward on my end, I think, well, to them it doesn't.
Right.
It's just, it's the round robin. They don't remember that. It's not personal. That's a little surprising that they would remember. I mean, maybe they.
It was hot and I was ornery.
Yeah. Somehow that stood out to them.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, we're sorry. So many people interview us, and we just like to mess with them, you know, and we apologize. So they did apologize to me.
And
after then, okay, I did play Brooks and Dunn every once in a while, but still, and since they did apologize, but it was a few years later, so, but I appreciated that since I brought it up, and I just said, "You weren't very kind to me." And they said, "We're sorry. You know,
we
get really bored with artists, so I really probably shouldn't slam them as much as I do, but it was just a really bad feeling. And if I hadn't brought it up or seen them again, that bad feeling would have been left. So I'm glad I had some closure on it because it was a very traumatizing.
That's weird because it's the whole, and I find this when I interview like literally anyone because I obviously listen to this podcast, you know, there are a lot of people who've made a name for themselves in music, which is why we do these interviews. I think this is probably my one chance. Sometimes I end up with like 3, 4, 5 interviews with someone and you figure, okay, I'm in a rotation. But sometimes, you know, this is my one shot. And you never want to screw that up.
Right.
Because, well, for one, how are you even getting this shot in the first place? Second, good luck getting a redo on top of that. It's a minor miracle that you ended up in a position where they actually could apologize for acting a certain way in the first place.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That doesn't usually happen.
Speaking of redo.
Yeah.
You know, you did ask me if there was an interview that surprised me, and I really kind of goofed up on that because there was one at my first country fest. It was Billy Ray Cyrus. I forgot about this.
Mm-hmm.
Rings true.
Yeah.
You're going, mm-hmm. But I did an interview with him. It was in the pouring rain mud fest, and his hair was all wet. We were all wet.
This is like peak mullet right after
Achy Breaking Heart. Oh my gosh, peak
Billy
of his.
Ray. Yes.
Where he thinks he's all that. And he actually had a mullet guard So that is the person that walks behind him and holds his mullet so that nobody cuts his hair. I can't make that up. Okay. I can't make that stuff up. Why? What the heck?
Wow.
So, but anyway, I did the interview and it was okay, whatever. Came back to where we're stationed at in our trailer. And then it was like 20 minutes later and George House, who was the program director for quite a few years, said, well, Billy's manager came over and he wants to do another interview. And we're all like, what? And it was just strange. And then he invited me to the Arsenio Hall show.
Back when Arsenio was still like one of the
yeah,
biggest shows around.
This really dates me.
Wow.
And then the manager said he's really serious about that after I came back. And they said, well, Terry's married. He doesn't care. Anyway, but when I discussed it with George Roberts, the station manager, and we thought that would be kind of a cool thing. But he said, how's that going to settle in at home? And I said, it won't. Mm. And he said, then we're not doing it.
Yeah.
So, respect.
Yeah.
Just strange. Well, just, that was strange. That I never had an artist want to redo an interview and then, whatever.
It's not long before.
And that's when Miley was like
was
1 year,
say.
Or she was just popping out a mom or something.
Yeah.
So he's probably going through some, I don't know. But
something
He's an interesting character.
Who are the more, which people that you've interviewed have been the most personable? You've already mentioned a few that were like Gretchen Wilson and Shania, but which ones, which are the interviews where you go, wow, this person, we could chat with them a while. Who are the most personable?
Travis Tritt's very, very personable. And his wife is also named Teresa. Teresa's my real name, mm-hmm. not Terry West. And really cool guy, really a lot of neat stories, and just really very personable. I guess I can't explain it more than that, but there are an awful lot of really cool people out there. Mm-hmm. It would a lot. I really like Montgomery Gentry, too. Spent a lot of time interviewing them. I think 3 or 4 interviews. But one thing, you know, that ended tragically, obviously, mm-hmm. with Troy Gentry passing away. But he was such an adventure seeker. Every time he came into Eau Claire, he had a new injury. He had just broken his leg. He fell off a horse because he had gone out riding on a horse he didn't know with a group of people he didn't know. And got bucked off.
Wow.
And yeah. And another thing, it's, oh my gosh, you know, people like to hear backstage stories. And one morning before Country Jam, his bus came in. They came in, and I happened to be backstage. And he's sitting in the front seat because I would get there early in the morning, way before anybody got on the ground. So it was like, I don't know, 8 o'clock in the morning. He's sitting in the seat opposite the bus driver, rubbing his eyes in his tidy whiteys. I kid you not. Sitting right in the front of the bus. And I saw him and he just waved, you know, like whatever. He was just such a free spirit, you know.
Wow.
In his tidy whiteys. It was hilarious. I'm like, I can't believe I can't unsee that, you know. But Troy Gentry, what a character.
Wow, rest in peace. What a guy.
Yeah.
Who are the least personable? Like the artists, they're like, I'm doing this because I have to. It's nothing personable, but nothing personal, but man, I wish I could just be like going on stage and just being a musician and okay, here we go.
There are a few. Gary Allen, very much so. Maybe Gary Allen will hear this. How many people are going to hear this? Well, I'm telling the truth.
You never know.
You know? Yeah.
And like I said, it's not that they're necessarily jerks. It's just that they're doing the interviews again. This is part of the package, if you will.
It's Gary Allen.
Yeah, because if you don't want to do an interview, you're not going to do an interview.
True.
Yeah.
True, but sometimes they might be pushed into it by management.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, or the record label guarantee.
Right.
I don't know what the inner workings are, but Gary Allen, very much so. Just definitely an attitude of I have to do this. But very, I asked my good friend Lisa Dent, mm-hmm. who's been in radio forever, about Gary, and she just said, he's worked for years and really does feel that he should have been a bigger name earlier. So it's harder for him to do all those little interviews. They just seem rather minuscule to him and not worth his time. Mm. So, but, you know, I did find I interviewed him a second time years later, a few years later, and he was much more personable that time. Mm-hmm. So I think we all have bad days. I think people would probably say that about us maybe too, you know, that, you know, we have off days. But yeah, that's the one person that would really stand out in that category.
Were there any of the, and this really gets into the backstage interactions, where there was maybe the biggest discrepancy between how an artist behaves, probably in a, hey, we're kind of loose, we'll talk to you, you know, come on back. That, like, if it were their choice, they'd probably have you on the bus, they do all that.
Yeah.
Versus their PR person, who is like full blown, no, you are doing this, 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 this. And it almost makes it seem like, wow, this artist is a jerk. No, it's the PR people, because the PR people got to keep them in line. And that's the sort of thing, as I've discovered, you learn over time. At first you think, wow, that artist is a jerk. No, 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 it's probably their PR person keeping them in check. Because
their handlers.
The handlers. Was there any, or what's the most extreme case between handler keeping them in line versus the artist where you go, oh, wow, this is like night and day right here?
Carrie Underwood comes to mind. But I don't know if, I think she was probably okay with it, but she was very micromanaged. And I remember it was rainy that night.
Yes,
it was pouring rain.
Yeah, because I remember that day there was standing, because a big storm came through and there was standing water and like right in front of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I remember there was a long delay on that one.
And she had on these like 6-inch heels. And I remember they brought her back in a cart and then backed it in, and then she had her crazy heels on. And she was almost as tall as me in her heels. But what a little beautiful China doll. She's just breathtaking in person. It's like, are you real? You almost want to touch her face. And I mean, she is just really breathtaking, but not a lot of personality.
Really?
Not on that particular night. Just yes, no, you know, going through the motions. And I kind of got the feeling, kind of almost a Gary Allen thing, maybe like, well, I kind of need to do this part of the day, or it could have been any number of things, but not real personable, you know, but you don't expect them to say, hey, how are you doing, you know, and I was one of a group of three people that had the chance to meet her, so, and I did not interview her.
Got it.
Yeah.
Other odds and ends from artist interactions over the years at any venue, in any context, other things that people wouldn't necessarily know. This is not like gossip sort of stuff, but rather stuff that you discovered over time as you chat with them, of like things that stood out, of that only someone who gets to interview an artist would necessarily know, things that stick in your head to this day over the decades.
Oh, man. I think just seeing some of their pre onstage routines, some of them like might get out some armbands and just stand with them. Many of them have a pre-prayer ritual. I can think of Lori Morgan. And there's others just backstage, and you could tell they were having private moments, but you know, a lot of them have that. One thing that I think is really cool is how when you're backstage, that's their home, okay? And there's a unwritten rule that you don't go interrupt them, but through the years I've seen Tim McGraw and Faith backstage with their kids, and that youngest one, oh my gosh, what a homely little ragamuffin. That kid was just, it's the youngest one. But anyway, she turned out a little better looking, but I was just shocked. I was spending some time with Tim McGraw, and she was hanging on his leg, and just her hair wasn't combed. She just looked like she was on tour with Dad, and she looked like a little ragamuffin, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting. And they'll sit out on their lawn chairs and put out their little pools, and you just don't really look at them, you know. But they really make themselves at home backstage, and that's kind of a something people probably don't realize, but it's really cool. I mean, I've seen Chris Ledoux coming out of the porta potty. You know, he didn't use the one on his bus. Just Sammy Kershaw laying under his bus to repair it because he, you know, he's kind of a handyman. He used to work at Walmart back in the day and is very much a handyman and does his own. My gosh, he works on his own bus.
Wow.
So, yeah. And I'll probably think of a million other things, but just, and there's the area where they eat outside too, and you can see the crew together eating with the artists sometimes, or sometimes quite a level of separation. So yeah, it's really fascinating. I have lots of stories, but I can't really think of all of them at the moment. Yeah.
Which artist that was at an event you were at, whether it's Country Jam or Fair or some concert, do you wish you could have interviewed, but it just so happened that the schedule worked out a certain way that another DJ was doing that, but you're like, I would really have preferred to get this, so be it. It just worked out that way.
Yeah. This one is actually wasn't at a festival, but the artist was coming to Eau Claire to specifically be on my show. And it just so happens that the car overheated, the rental car, and it had to be canceled. And that artist was Faith Hill. And it was one of her first interviews.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So those kind of things happen. But I think we would have really clicked. Mm. I've met her a couple times since then, but it was more just like, hi, bye, you know, right, and get a quick photo. Mm-hmm. But I think that would have been really cool. But it was pretty weird. I mean, they had, she and her guy, her promotion guy, had a heck of a day because they were on their way in and the car overheated. And I don't know the whole story, but I know they were not very happy about the whole thing. So they couldn't come to Eau Claire.
Understandable, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I would have loved to have interviewed, Dolly Parton would have been really cool, but nobody was able to interview her, you know. But sometimes you got to shoot for the sky. I think we would have talked pretty cool, well together.
Yeah.
Nothing else really comes to mind. Maybe Keith Urban, but I had the chance to meet him, and so I'm good. I'm really happy.
What was your last interview? I should remember this from this past summer.
Oh, that's a good question.
What was your? Because I'm presuming you're not anticipating interviewing any more artists going forward. I mean, maybe, you never know, but what would be ostensibly your last artist interview?
Marty Raybon from Shenandoah.
Oh.
What a lovely guy. I was so shocked. I mean, not that I didn't really have any anticipation, but what a lovely, lovely person. He really made you feel like you could go to his house and eat a big meal. Very spiritual person, just really a cool guy. And I can't remember if he was John Michael Montgomery. I also got to interview again. I've interviewed him like three times.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then when you bring it up, it's like, John, we've talked before. He's like, okay, whatever. You know, they don't.
Not all of them do remember.
No, heck no. He's like, all right. I'm like, you know, Turtle Lake, the casino, St. Croix Casino, when it opened up in 92. He's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, how many casinos has he opened up over the years? Like, it's all a blur at this point.
Right.
I did ask about the personable versus reserved. By and large, would you say artists are more one or the other or somewhere in between? What would you say is, are people more artists or are they more like, hey, they get along with everyone? Because that's kind of speaking to how they became as big as they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's a certain element of personality that comes into it. It's not just talent. It's also not just looks. Part of it is also how you interact with people. Would you say there are more of the artists that you've encountered, whether through interviews or backstage, whatever, are they more of the gregarious, outgoing type? Or are they more of the, we're doing this because we have to, we're more of an artist? What would you say the split is?
I would say most of them want to be there and they want to perform, but they're more reserved before the show, particularly because they want to put on a good show. After, you'll see them loosen up and have some drinks and be side stage and cheering on their fellow artists. I see a lot of that because they are friends. I think there's a nice network of friends that I witnessed. And not so much the prima donna stuff, although Luke Bryan did have to have the wind blowing on him with scented. It was it lilac? I don't remember, but I was on stage before and I asked the MC, I said, "What's the smell up here?" He says, "Oh, I don't know. It's Luke's special scent." So,
whatever works. If that makes him a better artist, fine.
But it was really very aromatic, and it was these big, like, tumblers. It looked like big dryer tumblers that had a scent coming out of them, like we're shopping at the Gap, you know?
Yeah.
And other people had rugs. You know, special rugs for under
See those
feet.
A lot on stage.
Yeah. One artist I never, ever, ever, ever thought would make it was Kenny Chesney.
Really?
Never. Doesn't
Why?
Have the look. I didn't have the personality. I was the very first person to interview him, if not the second. And I have a picture with him. He's in overalls. Nothing on under the overalls. It was a really hot day. Not much for personality, very shy, very timid. We did a bar event with him at Sergio's back in the day. He was okay, but he just sang his songs via karaoke and hung out with us, but I just totally did not see it.
Wow.
Totally did not see it.
It did take a while. I mean, he had some hits, but it wasn't overnight before he... Like when he really burst out. And he's always been, correct me if I'm wrong, he's always been a little bit more reserved in the media writ large. He's not one of those that's always out talking. You don't hear too much from him.
Yeah. So, and that's just his personality. That's why it surprised me so much. But sometimes those introverts are really good on stage. And I happen to be an introvert in an extrovert job.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us are. Mm. You know?
I'm one of them too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. So that's kind of... an interesting fact too, but I think many performers are, and they're kind of scared a little bit before they get on stage, but it's a cool high, and it's really a nice job to have.
Yeah, it is. It's a fun job. It's a fascinating one. Mm-hmm. So why did you decide to retire?
I guess my husband's going to retire in 6 months, and I just want to tour myself.
Right.
Do my own touring. We're going to go to Norway and do a couple of different things, and I've done it for so long, you know. And also there are so many young people coming up. What if, you know, it's just important that they get a chance too. I feel like I've done a lot, and it's really been an amazing career. And you know, also flying with the Blue Angels was very cool. You know, I know that's probably not the subject we're talking about now, but
it's part of you. You got the chance to do that.
That was amazing. That was truly amazing. So, yeah, it was time. You know, I had never thought about retiring, but all of a sudden, people have told me, and you'll hear this too as you get older. You got a ways to go. People will say, you'll know when it's time.
Yeah.
And you know, one day I was working on something in a studio, and I said, it's time. I just knew, you know, and the next day I wrote my letter. So there was just not much thought that went into it, but I had the ability to retire and get some things done at home. And I tell you, all my closets are clean. My pantry's clean. I have my Christmas tree up already. I'm just way, way ahead of the game.
I know,
so
wow.
I need to find my happy medium, I think.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Could you ever see yourself doing anything in a broadcasting sense? Not necessarily radio per se, because the medium's evolving. Radio will be around ever, probably. But but do you see yourself doing any sort of music industry / broadcasting, anything else in the future? Or is that a chapter and it
you
is
know,
now close?
I would never rule that out. I would... keep things open because I, you know, if the opportunity came, possibly, sure. Mm-hmm. And there's so many ways you can do it remotely now that, you know, I wouldn't rule anything out. Just it was time for someone else to take over. I'd had a lot of time and worked with wonderful people here. It's been really amazing, you know, but younger ones were coming up, you know, and it was time. And Caitlin's doing a great job.
Caitlin Clark currently does Good Days on Wax, and she started as an intern here at the station, and has been a part timer for a long time, and has filled in admirably, and now she's got the gig. At least for now, we'll see how. I, think she could be doing that maybe 29 years just like you. You never know how these things
that
go.
That could be. And you know what? In all the years that I've been on the radio, I've never listened to myself.
Really?
Never.
Never. I mean, I know for a long time you couldn't.
Air checks. Right. We sometimes check on ourselves. I never do. And I never listen to any other air shifts except the shift before me.
Wow.
Just because I need to get in the zone before I come in and get on the air. But then I don't really listen.
Wow. And yet you did an incredible job on the radio.
Oh, well, thank
you. It's like the people that like... People that can't read music, yet they're incredible musicians. And you go, wait, how can you not... Like Paul McCartney, for example, can't read music. Mm-hmm. He's Paul McCartney. He's one of the best pop musicians ever.
He can't read music?
By my understanding, I think, yeah.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
But
just has an incredible pitch.
Right.
And the feel for it. It's uh-huh. God-given, I suppose.
Yeah. You don't... Mm-hmm. I mean, for a lot of people, you got to do all the stuff. It's not always required.
Right.
And if you're good enough, mm-hmm. you will get through. And, well, you did it for an entire career.
Well, my mom was a vocalist, too. The whole family were musicians. When I was growing up, my mom would perform in nightclubs. I'd usually go there and eat some supper. And she used to be on a TV show in Mason City, Iowa, Bart's Clubhouse, and would sing at the end of that. And anyway, she was very talented.
And that's probably where you got part of your talent. I mean, I've always talked about how my dad was in journalism
sure.
and broadcasting.
Yeah.
My mom's a musician. What do you know? I'm in music radio.
The
two meld perfectly. In your case, you have an uncle in radio. You had a mother in music.
Yeah.
And what do you know? You worked in music radio and made a heck of a career out of it.
Yeah.
Well... Thank you so much for talking about this. This was insightful. There were a lot of nuggets in that. That was really cool.
Oh, well, thank you. It was nice to talk with you. And I drew a couple blanks along the way, but
okay.
there are a lot of different, 29 years is a lot of years. So,
it is. Mm-hmm. But that was really cool. Terry, thanks for being on the radio and being the voice for a whole lot of us growing up around here and doing all that you did with your career.
Well, thank you, and it's been nice to talk with you and work with you as well.
Yeah, same,
you're a sweetie.
Same here. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Been the latest edition of Got Time for a Quick Story. Again, you can find the podcast on a lot of the usual podcasting platforms, on the usual. And if you've got an iPhone, look in the podcast app, your Android device, you can subscribe to it. Thanks to Midwest Family Eau Claire, the place where I work, and of course I work at the greatest, it's 98.1 radio. You'll hear on a lot of these podcasts providing the facilities to do these interviews. Midwest Family Eau Claire also owns Wax 104.5, where Terry did most of her recent work. Subscribe to the podcast so you can find out about new episodes. Rate it up, preferably, would help spread the word around even more. Got time for a quick story? I'm Luke Anthony.